Parshas Maaseh. In this week's parsha, we find that the subject of Ori Niklot is mentioned. In fact, it's mentioned at great length as well. So I'd like to share with you a most fascinating Be'er Yosef. Be'er Yosef is a sefer we've mentioned a number of times, written by Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Salant. He was one of the big magidim in Yerushalayim here, in the early Yishuv. And he is not afraid on occasion to suggest very, very novel chidushim. And here is a classic case in point. It's going to be something a little bit different perhaps to our normal style, but it's so interesting, I thought I'd share it with you. In Peret Lamed Hei, Pasuk Yud Gimel. When the instruction comes forth with regard to Ori Miklot, and it says, the Ha'orim Asher Titeinu, Sheish Ori Miklot Tihien Olochem. Rashi says, quoting a Chazal, but even so, the Pasuk tells me that how many Ori Miklot were there all together? There were six. Now we know there were three outside of Eretz Yisrael in Eivar LaYarden, and there were three in Eretz Yisrael. Three in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the problem is, Moshe Rabbeinu never actually entered Eretz Yisrael. So he set up three Ori Miklot in what we call Eivar LaYarden, but none of them were functional. None of them were functional, because they're only functional when you have all six, and Moshe Rabbeinu never went in Eretz Yisrael to build up the last three. So what happened? So Rashi is quoting Chazal over here, that what happened was they eventually entered Eretz Yisrael. For 14 years they spent fighting wars and capturing Eretz Yisrael, and eventually they then set up the final three Ori Miklot, six altogether, and that now activated all six. So it turns out that for 14 years the Eretz Yisrael was being occupied by Klal Yisrael, even though they hadn't fully conquered it yet. There were no functioning Ori Miklot whatsoever, even though three had already been set up by Moshe Rabbeinu in his lifetime. But at the end of the day, they weren't functional, because you have to have all six in order for them to be operative. Three is not good enough. So the Be'er Yosef asks a very fascinating question. Very, very strange. 14 years, anybody who killed the Shegeg had no city of refuge, had no Ori Miklot, had no respite. So if a Goel Hadam would want to come and kill him, open season, he's got no escape. Which is rather peculiar. I mean, after all, the whole point of the Ori Miklot is to give the Reitzeach B'Shegeg this opportunity to save his life. And yet for 14 years the Klal Yisrael were in Eretz Yisrael fighting wars and conquering the land. They didn't have this option at all. They didn't have this option at all. So he explains Alpi a very big Kiddush. And he suggests, now obviously you can't really back this up, but he suggests the following Kiddush. We know that when somebody goes to Ori Miklot, how long does he have to spend there? There is no fixed amount of time. It's until the Kohen Gadol passes away. So much so, the Mishnah famously told us that the mothers of the Kohenim Gedolim used to come with food packages to the Ori Miklot, begging them, please don't pray that my son, the Kohen Gadol, should pass away, because they'd be very tempted for them to daven, for them to pass away, and that is get out of jail card. So in order that shouldn't happen, they appeased them and they gave them mezainos and food packages. So the Gemara asks, one moment, why on earth is it the Kohen Gadol's fault in the first place? Here you have thousands of reitzchim, or hundreds of reitzchim, all davening that he should pass away. Why is he guilty? It happens to be that the Torah says that when he dies, that everybody's let out of Ori Miklot. But here you have all the reitzchim davening for his death. So the Gemara famously tells us, because it's his fault. Why is it his fault? Because had he been a worthy Kohen Gadol, then he would have prayed, he would have davened, that in his generation, in his lifetime, there wouldn't be any murders for Shegeg. So if it indeed happened, ultimately it means that he didn't daven properly. He didn't daven properly, wasn't concerned enough. So if he wasn't concerned enough, So his tefillahs were either non-existent or non-powerful, and that's why there ended up being these murders. So ultimately, it really is the Kohen Gadol getting his just desserts. He deserves, as it were, to have people davening for his death, because after all, it's his fault. That is the Gemara that is well known. So here comes the Chiddush of the Be'er Yosef. It's a suggestion. I don't really think you can prove this one way or the other, but he suggests the following. He says, when Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, who was the Kohen Gadol? Elazar HaKohen. In fact, the son of Aaron HaKohen. We know this because it says quite clearly in Pasuk Yud Zayin, in Perek Lamed Dalet, just after Ravi, it says, Eila Shmoiso Anoshim, these are the names of the people who will bequeath the land to you, Elazar HaKohen, Vishua Benun. Elazar HaKohen, after the passing away of Aaron HaKohen, by the way, tonight, Rosh Chodesh Av is Aaron HaKohen's Yotzeit, his son, Elazar HaKohen, took over the Kohuna. Elazar HaKohen was the son of Aaron HaKohen, and he was the brother-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he was pretty well connected. He's also a brother-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu, because he was married to Yitzhak's daughter. So Moshe Rabbeinu was both his uncle and also his brother-in-law. So he was well connected. He was a tzaddik yisoid olam. So the Be'er Yosef says, we can pretty much safely assume that Elazar HaKohen, being the great Elazar HaKohen that he was, he definitely davened properly. We can hardly assume that Elazar HaKohen didn't daven for his generation. Therefore, this is a tremendous chiddush and suggestion of Be'er Yosef. Elazar HaKohen davened in all those 14 years, you can be rest assured that he davened repeatedly that nobody should kill B'Shegeg, and indeed, nobody killed B'Shegeg. And therefore, there was no necessity to have Ori Miklot, because there was no murders, B'Shegeg. This is the chiddush of the Be'er Yosef. As I mentioned, I'm not really sure you can bring a proof to this. It's a suggestion. Again, if people only ever kill the Shege because the Kohen Gadol didn't daven, then we can safely assume that Elazar HaKohen, of all people, the son of Aaron, surely davened for his generation. There were no accidental murders, in which case there was no necessity really for Ori Miklot to be functioning at all. Therefore, the fact that there was no operative Ori Miklot was not a problem because there was no necessity for it. However, there is a huge problem, and he asks this himself. He says, one second, there is a big problem. Because the Gemara in Makkah says the following. It says in Parshas Mishpatim that if somebody will kill by accident, Vasamti Lecho Mokoim, I will place a Mokoim Lecho. Who's Lecho? Who's for you? The pasuk is very strange. It says, if somebody will kill by accident, I will give you a place. Who's you? Who's the Torah talking to? It should have said, if somebody will kill by accident, I will give Samti Loi, I will give him. Who's you? Who's the Torah talking to? So the Gemara says, a chiddush, and we'll see in a moment. The Gemara says, the Samti Lecho, Lecho, you means you, Moshe Rabbeinu, b'chayecha, in your lifetime. In your lifetime, there will actually be, as it were, a type of Ori Miklot. Where's the Ori Miklot? We said the three Ori Miklot were non-functional, so where is the Ori Miklot? So the Gemara says, if you go to Machane Levion, we know there were three Machanes, Yisrael, Levion, and Kohuna. Machane Levia was, as it were, in the Midbar, a type of Ir Miklot. So how's the Gemara translating the Samti Lecho Mokoim? Lecho means Lecho, in your lifetime, in you, Moshe Rabbeinu's lifetime, even though you won't enter Eretz Yisrael. But there will, as it were, be Ir Miklot in your lifetime. Where will they be? Machane Levia.
Why do we
need a Miklot before we go to Eretz Yisrael? So what's the obvious question now? Says the Be'er Yosef, one moment. We just said that when they entered Eretz Yisrael, they didn't need Ori Miklot, because you had the great Elazar Kohen davening for his dough. No, and when they were in the Midbar,
Yad Elazar Kohen, Yad Aaron Kohen, were they also daven for their dough? So if we're back to square one. You see that there was apparently a necessity for Ori Miklot, even in the times of Aaron Kohen. So we're back to square one. When you came into Eretz Yisrael, presumably there was a necessity also for Ori Miklot, and therefore, where were they? 14 years, there were no Ori Miklot. The Eri Yosef says a phenomenal thing. A phenomenal thing, and I'll share it with you. Now, this is a little bit Kabbalistic. Everybody is over 40. Don't think they're going to be under 40. He quotes in the name of the Arizal. Quotes in the name of the Arizal. Very, very, very fascinating thing. The Arizal quotes a Zohar. The Arizal quotes a Zohar. And he says, Moshe Rabbeinu himself once, as it were, committed an act of murder. Who did he kill? He killed the Egyptian in Mitzrayim, the Ish Mitzri. Now he did it for good reason, because the Ish Mitzri was busy beating up a Jew. So it says that the evil force, some explain this was a reincarnation of the Nochosh in the times of Gan Eden, Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden, he was the Goyel Hadam, he was the redeemer of the Mitzri. We always know that when you kill somebody b'shegeg, the closest of kin, the family member, is the Goyel Adam. He can kill, some say it's actually a mitzvah, but certainly he's allowed to kill the murderer. Moshe Rabbeinu was, as it were, the Roitzeach. Who did he kill? He killed the Mitzri. Comes along this evil force and is now threatening to take, to seek the vengeance of this Mitzri against Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu actually needed, as it were, Ori Miklot. He needed Ori Miklot. Now, even though he never killed the Shegig, he certainly killed the Mitzri, b'mezid. But the Zohar says, again, tremendous chiddush, that even though he killed him, b'mezid, but because it was with positive intention, and he says it was in order to masakin the neshama of the Mitzri, however you will understand that. Therefore it is classified as a shegeg, and therefore he needed Ori Miklot. So therefore says the Zohar, tremendous chiddush. He says, when you look at the pasuk in Mishpatim, and it says, Makei ish, v'meis, mois yumos. If you kill the ish, which ish? You know the ishes? It says in Parashas Shemois, you killed the ish mitzri. It's a reference to that mitzri. So essentially, if it's mezid, mois yumos, you have to put together. But if it's by accident, and Moshe Rabbeinu's murder of this Egyptian is classified as an accident, then v'samti l'cha makoy. What does l'cha mean? Now it really is literal. Not just l'cha in your lifetime, but rather you, Moshe Rabbeinu, need a city of refuge. And therefore, it says you will need a place, Asher Yonus Shomo. What's Asher Yonus Shomo? What's the Rosh HaTevas of Asher Yonus Shomo? Asher Yonus Yud Shomo. Aleph Yud Shin. The Ish. Who is the Ish, as it says with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kizer Moshe Ha'ish. That's what it says in the Zohar. So V'samti L'cha Mokoyim, who needed an Ori Miklot over here? L'cha, literally. The Gemara says L'cha means in your lifetime. But the Zohar explains L'cha is very literal, and it actually means you will need a city of refuge, because you need to escape the Goyal Adam, who is coming to attack you as a result of having killed the Mitzri. So if that's the case, we can say as follows, says the Be'er Yosef. We can restore our former theory. In the times of Elazar HaKohen, he davened for Klal Yisrael, there was no murder of the Shaykh. And therefore there was no necessity to have Ori Miklot at all. So what was the question? So how come in the times of Aaron HaKohen, then you did need Ori Miklot? And what is the answer?
He only needed it for Moshe Rabbeinu. He didn't essentially need it for everybody. Therefore, says the Bar Yosef, I'd like to restore my theory. As long as Aaron HaKohen and Elazar HaKohen were the Kohenim Gedolim, they were davening for their generation, and indeed there were no murders b'shogeg, and there was no general necessity for Ari Miklot. So for 14 years they came to Eretz Yisrael, there was no Ari Miklot. So where are all the murderers b'shogeg going to go? The answer is, there weren't any, because they davened for them. So why in the Midbar did they need Ari Miklot? L'chor. They needed it specifically only for Moshe Rabbeinu. Only for Moshe Rabbeinu. No, those three were for the general public and they were non-operative. They were non-operative. But the one that was operative was the Machne Leviyon. Now the interesting thing is, again, look at the pasuk. It says, if somebody kills b'shogeg, v'samti l'cho mokoyim, I will give you a place, asher yonus. What does Yonus mean? That he will flee. So we're switching backwards and forwards to second person, third person. So Be'er Yosef says very beautifully what that means is as follows. It says L'cho. Really, technically speaking, this Ari Miklot is only necessary for who? Right. Only for you, Moshe Rabbeinu. But I'll sort of cover it up as if it's for the general masses. Asher Yonus, that they will run to. We don't want to embarrass Moshe Rabbeinu. Mipnei Kvaydei Shal Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't really want to emphasize the point that he's the only one who needs Ari Miklot. So on one hand, it's hinted to by the word Lecha, but Yonus means where he will run. Who's he? Somebody else, the general population, whoever murders b'shogeg. But in actuality, says the Be'yosef, there wasn't anybody. Why? Because we could be rest assured that Aaron HaKohen and in turn Elazar HaKohen were davening for their generation such that nobody actually murdered b'shogeg and therefore nobody needed Ari Miklot at all. That's what Avodah Zarah.
Yeah, but they
were
killed,
right? So they say... Okay, that was an Einish, that was a specific Einish, Alpiyah, Kodesh Baruch Hu's instruction. That was a specific Einish, Kodesh Baruch Hu's instruction.
Moshe was around.
Yes, that's a good question. What happened in all the time until we had the Mishkan and the Machane Leviyon? Yeah, that's a fair point.
Although it seems that the Goyal Adam is allowed to kill
the murderer who killed the b'shogeg. Now if you look in Parashas Shoftim, the Torah adds three words, the words that you just said. Why is he allowed to kill him? Ki yecham levovoi. Because his heart is boiling. Somebody has killed his relative, even though it be b'shogeg, ki yecham levovoi, and therefore he is allowed special halacha in the Torah dispensation to go and kill the murderer. There is a very important principle over here. And this principle is taught to us by Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. And he says as follows. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, Parshas Borok and then Parshas Pinchas, we come across for the first time the inyan of the Avodah Zarah of Baal Pa'or, which is the most strange and remarkable type of Avodah Zarah, where Chazal tell us, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, that the service of the Avodah Zarah was literally to relieve oneself in front of the Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara describes then in very graphic and gory detail that, as it were, the more you are mevazeh the Avodah Zarah, as it were, the better the service of the Avodah Zarah was considered. Which is obviously something that needs explanation. What was the big taiva to serve an Avodah Zarah like this? In the most demeaning, the most degrading manner. What was the whole concept of the Avodah Zarah of Baal Pa'or? So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz tells us, this is a very, very important yesod. When a person, as it were, literally relieves himself from the Avodah Zarah, what he in fact is expressing is that I do not have any restrictions or limitations. He lets himself go in every possible understanding.
He has no limitations. Behaves like an animal, literally. And he says, that exactly was the taiva of the Avodah Zarah. To feel 100% non-restricted, to let oneself go to the full, that was the taiva of the Avodah Zarah of Baal Po'oi. And Chaim Shulevitz explains, a Jew never, at any stage, in any circumstance, in any place, ever, is unrestricted. There's no such concept. The minute you are unrestricted, then you're no longer an Eved Hashem. By definition, if you're an Eved of a master, then you have rules. Where you can go and where you can't go, and what are your times and what are your hours and what are the rules. The minute the Eved turns round and says, I'm going to do things on my terms, then he has just announced that he's no longer an Eved. Because by definition, if you're an Eved, then it's on the master's terms. But if it's on my terms, I will do as I please, with no limitations, with no restrictions whatsoever, then you're no longer an Eved. That is the Avodah Zarah of Baal Po'oi. Says Rav Chaim Shulevitz, a phenomenal thing. We find in two areas in the Torah, and of course this is one of them, this is why we're discussing it. There are two areas in the Torah, who can think of the other example, where essentially we're dealing with an Avera, the worst of the worst, like murder, and the Torah allows it. The Torah allows murder. Where else do you find it? The Torah allows murder. Eishes Yifas Toya. So Kanoim Poigim Boyes for a different reason. Then you're trying to cut the Shem Shemaim. But where do we find that the Torah, as it were, understands Kaviyochel that a person is going to have a great time and a big Yitzhara either to commit Ritzicha or Gilui Arroyos? And here we find two examples. Yecham Levavoy. His blood is boiling. And if you tell him not to murder, he'll murder nonetheless. The Torah says, I will give special dispensation and a permit to go and murder. Same thing as Yifas Toya. As we know, it's the very first Rashi in Parshas. Kiseitze lo dibra Torah elo keneged Yetzirah. Person knows, the Torah understands, he goes to battle, he's going to have taiva, he's going to want Yifas Toya, we'll let you marry her. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, here comes the big Yisoid. Do you know what the common denominator between Ori Mikrot and Yifas Toya is? Yes, they are both permitted. And yes, the Torah understands, as it were, that these are special circumstances. However, capital H, they both come with a whole long list of restrictions. Look how long the parasha of Ari Miklot is in our parasha. Those who were in our share a number of years ago, we know there's a whole perek that discusses the halachas of Ari Miklot. It's not so simple. There's a whole bunch of rules, how you can kill him, when you can kill him, under what circumstances, where is he standing, is he in your Miklot, is he on his way down, is he on his way back? Why does there have to be so many restrictions, so many rules? The answer is, because otherwise, what will this person feel? I'm not an Eved Hashem. Kodesh Baruch Hu has given me the day off. I'm an Eved Hashem for 120 years, minus one day. One day I can go around killing. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? No. Even as a Reitzeach, you're a Reitzeach who's an Eved Hashem. Even whilst marrying the Yifas Toya, which might essentially be considered Arroyos, there too, if you look in the parish of Kiseitse, there are rules, there are restrictions, it's not so easy. You take it to your home, it's 30 days, it's a whole long process. Why do you need this whole process? If it's Mutter, it's Mutter. Says Rav Chaim Shulevitz, that's the Yisoid. Don't think for a moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ever allows you to be a non-Eved Hashem. That doesn't exist. There exists the concept of killing as a Goel Adam. There exists the concept of committing, as it were, Arayas under very extenuating circumstances. But even then, you're an Eved Hashem. And that's why the common denominator between the two parishes is, yes, they are both Mutter, but they both come with a whole set of laws and restrictions. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz in conclusion, a most fascinating thing. If you look in Parshas Vayes Tana, it says we have the issa of Baal Tosef. Do not add. If you want to put on tefillin, as you must, don't have five parashas. Don't have three parashas. When you shake your arba minim, make sure it's arba, not three, not five. And how does the Torah continue there? It says, Lo yisay sifu, do not add to the mitzvahs, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who hates Baal Pa'or, outlaws adding or detracting from the mitzvahs. What's adding or detracting from the mitzvahs got to do with Baal Pa'or? You know the answer is? Why would you want to have five parashas in your tefillin? I understand three, it's cheaper. Why five? Why would you want to have five minim on Sukkos? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, do you know what's going through this person's mind? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't mind doing the mitzvahs, but it will be on my terms, how I choose to do the mitzvah. I just want to go out of my way to show that I'm the boss. I'll do the arba minim. In fact, it's not quite the arba, it's the chamisha minim. So what are you clearly demonstrating? I don't mind working, I don't mind being a slave, I don't mind being an eved, but on my terms. There's no such thing. Well, then you're not an eved. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry to tell you, is in a tamped amount of Baal Pa'or. Baal Pa'or is somebody who relieves himself from fancy avodah zarah and says, I will not be restricted in any way, is exactly the same as somebody who puts five parashas in his tefillin. Because what is he telling the Kodesh Baruch Hu? I'll set the rules. If it fits in with me, the way I choose to do tefillin, the way I choose to do tzitzis, the way I choose to do arba minim, that's the same as Baal Pa'or. I once heard the Rebaruch Be'er, the great Kamenitz Rosh Hashiva, used to quite regularly eat a meaty meal, which was rather strange. Why would he indulge, as it were? And he once explained, it's not for the sake of indulging. But after you eat meat, you cannot then go and eat milk for 6 hours. So he says, every time I eat meat, it's an extra chizuk. For 6 hours, I'm an Eved Hashem. I'm restricted. I can't just eat whatever I like. That's why I used to eat meat. Sorry to mention this on the first night of the 9 days. We have to understand that this is really what Torah is all about. When Torah guides our life, what it means is it's the book that teaches us how to be an Eved Hashem. The introduction to Kabbalah Satorah, what was the first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said before you makabal the Torah? Put a fence around Har Sinai. That's the Hakdoma. There's a Hakbola. It's not a free-for-all. This is not a free-for-all. You have to understand what Avdus is all about. And that's why we've discussed this on other occasions. We won't launch into it in depth. But the Beis HaLevi explains at great length that was really the shirish of the Chet HaEgel. When they served the Egel, don't think they just rejected all of Torah. Of course they were Mechavan Hashem Shemayim, and as the Mechorosh explained, they didn't have an intermediary and they wanted one. It's all fine and well. But nobody mandated this type of Avodas Hashem. It was DIY Avodas Hashem. Do it yourself, as you please, on your own terms. That was the Chet HaEgel. And what was the kapara for the Chet HaEgel? Say Chazal, build the Mishkan. You brought your earrings, and you brought your gold, and your zahav, and your silver for the Egel, now donate it to the Mishkan. And what does it say time and time and time and time again, 18 times in the parasha of the Mishkan? Ka'asher Sivo Hashem Es Maisha. That's why it's the kapara. Don't forget you're an Eved Hashem. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs you. There are rules, there are limitations. This is not be mekayim the mitzvahs however you see fit. We should just say in conclusion, final line, that we mustn't however misunderstand. This sounds a little bit miserable and a bit bleak. So that's what it means to be a Jew. You live a life of being restricted. And for 9 days, there's no meat, and there's no wine, and there's no washing, there's no haircut, and there's no music. It's just a list of no, no, no's, no, no, don't. Sounds a bit miserable and a bit depressing. And yet, Chazal tell us the opposite. The freest people are those who study the Torah. Eincha ben chayrin, elamisha isek v'Torah. How can that be? How can the freest people be described as those who learn Torah? I would have thought those are the most restricted people on planet Earth. One day a week, you can't turn on your phone, you can't cook, you can't write, you can't build. That's called being free. That's called being restricted. And the answer is, we must never, chas v'shalom, misunderstand the halachas of the Torah. As I once heard a beautiful line from Rabbi Miller, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, from Gateshead, as he explains, he says, the laws of the Torah are not restrictions, they are refinements. They are the way that the character, the personality of every Jew is uplifted. Imagine you have to cross the Niagara Falls, and you're not a professional tightrope walker. And there's a narrow, narrow bridge, it's about 50 centimeters wide, and you're now going to walk across the bridge. Which mashugim in the world will do such a thing? One wrong step, and that's it, instant death. So what do? They put a barrier on the left-hand side, and a barrier on the right, and now you can walk across the bridge. So what are you going to say? Oh, I feel so restricted. So limited. No! Those barriers is what allows you to travail, allows you to cross the Niagara Falls, because if they weren't there, then every step of the way is instant death. That's what the laws of the Torah are. The laws of the Torah are the barriers at the side of this narrow bridge, Gesher Tzar Ma'oid. Life is a narrow bridge with pitfalls all around us, with the Yetzer Hara and the Taivas and all the Averas. 365 of them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us laws, which are the bridges at the side, the walls at the side. They're not to be restrictions. They make you chayrin. You can now walk across the Niagara Falls. It might only be 50 centimeters wide. You haven't got a fear in the world. You can't possibly fall because there's enormous barriers on the side. So when Chazal tell us that the laws of the Torah are to make us feel b'nei chayrin, do you know what that means? They make us b'nei chayrin? Free. Free from who? From the Yetzer Hara. That's what it means. The laws of the Torah are not HaKadosh Baruch Hu and then eventually Chazal looking for ways, how can we restrict people? And how can we make their life as miserable and as limited as possible? To the contrary, these are the barriers at the side of the bridge. We needn't fear anymore the Yetzer Hara. If you erect those barriers and you adhere to them, that's called being an Eved Hashem. If you think you can outsmart the Torah, then that's Avodah Zarah of Baal Po'ed. And that's the Chet HaEgel. That's not the Mishkan. And that's why in our parasha, the murderer is allowed under very, very, very specific circumstances to kill. Gimel Averos Chamuros, it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it comes with a whole bunch of laws and restrictions. Why? Because even in the midst of an act of murder, which is permissible, but don't for a second forget, ever, that you have to remain ad mea v'esrim shona as a true and loyal Eved Hashem.